When you were caught between the moon and New York City. Yay. Hello, America. How are you?
How are you?
Ooh. Trying to get all harmony on me.
Yeah.
Okay. Harmony, because that harmony is an adjective.
Is it?
It's like a Joss Whedon. I don't know. Hello, America. How are you? I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Welcome once again to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. We come to you this week with another edition of the best movie of all time.
Boom.
I feel like it's been forever since we did one of these.
It has, really. Because last time we did the best TV series of all time.
That's true.
So it's been a while since the movies.
We're blazing trails and changing the world. That's what we're doing. But right now we're going back to a movie, and it's very timely, because the remake of this film has come out the week before this airs. And I will probably have seen it, and we'll see what my reaction will be. But you won't hear it here, because we're recording this like a month before.
Boom!
Because it is from 1981, written and directed by, who's the man, Mr. Nick Melton?
Steve Gordon.
Steve Gordon, and the movie is Arthur.
Rah!
Not Arthur Raw, just Arthur.
Arthur, yeah.
The original, starring Mr. Dudley Moore and the great Liza Minnelli.
Or at least the insectoid Liza Minnelli.
You had fun with Liza, didn't you?
I had fun this whole movie.
I'm really glad. This is one of my favorites. This is a movie that, I'll be honest with you, Nick, and I don't mean to toot my own horn, but you kind of wouldn't expect this to be a movie I'd like, would you?
I guess it's a little unusual for Jeff, but I could see why you like it.
It's just a movie I quite enjoy. This is a movie, it's been around for quite a long time, since 1981, obviously. This is indeed the 30th anniversary, so that's perfect timing for a remake. This film, it was around all that time, and then about 2004... I woke up really early one morning in the summer before my senior year of high school. It was on USA Network. I fell in love with this movie. And I've been carrying along with that ever since. And that's my personal story.
I have no personal story.
Exactly.
This movie. Like, I was aware of it. I just hadn't seen it.
Right. How should we handle this first? Should we do plot cast? What do you want to do?
You want to talk about the plot for a little bit?
Let's talk about the plot. Here's the thing. I feel like this movie was the first to do this kind of plot, but this plot has been copied by so many.
Well, it's, I think, a pretty influential movie.
It is.
It's certainly one of the most influential of the 80s.
Definitely. The plot of this film finds Arthur Bach, played by the great Dudley Moore, the late great Dudley Moore. He's a young, very drunken billionaire playboy.
Basically an alcoholic.
Absolutely an alcoholic. Which, I love the slur that I've got going.
Alcohol. Yeah,
I must apologize. This is episode 74. This was preceded by episode 73, in which I had an influx of saliva, so that's carrying over.
Fine, though, given the alcoholic nature of
this is
movie.
True. We're watching the movie, and Dudley Moore is just drinking all kinds of liquor, and Nick realizes he wants some liquor. Luckily, we had two bottles of a hard apple cider left.
And now we're drinking it in recognition of this movie.
It's true. So let's take a sip. Yeah, all right. Well, anyway, yes, the plot. Arthur Bach, he's a billionaire playboy. He hasn't quite grown up. He's still just kind of living off of that money and not really being an adult in any fashion. Picks up hookers. You know, he's not...
So he's a horny kid.
Horny kid. Very much a horny kid.
He likes his booze.
He does. He lives with his trusty butler and very good friend, Mr. Hobson, played by the Academy Award-winning... Sir John Gielgud, who won the Oscar for this movie,
yeah.
Yes. They live together, and Arthur is sort of betrothed, basically, to marry a woman named Susan Johnson, played by Jill Eikenberry. She is the daughter of a very wealthy man in his own right. I don't quite know what his business is, we just know he likes to shoot things.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much all we know. But indeed, he meets and falls in love with a...
A free spirit who wears weird clothes.
Yes, and sort of a lower working class lady from Queens named Linda Marola, played by the great Liza Minnelli. And her father is played by TV legend and Jerry Seinfeld's TV father. What's the actor's name?
Don't know.
That's we really can great find of us. Out. Let's find out, because I feel bad. We should know his name.
Barney Martin.
Barney Martin. And I believe he passed away this year, very sad.
Really?
I could be wrong about that. I could be thinking of Uncle
Barney,
Leo.
The dinosaur.
No, I'm thinking Uncle Leo, but
Uncle Leo, he died in 2005, actually.
Oh, so he's gone. That's sad. Well, anyway, the point is, he's delightful in this picture as well. Everybody's delightful in this picture. This is just a delightful picture. That's the fact of the matter. But it's all about Arthur's conflict with... I didn't even get to the main point. His family gives him an ultimatum. He must marry Susan Johnson or he will lose his $750 million. And so he's torn between true love and money. And not all, that all unattractive woman, but still not the woman he wants.
Who is inexplicably in love with Arthur?
I never know how to take July Kinberry's character. It's... Clearly, she's aware of the fact that this whole thing is intended to be a sort of a monetary transaction.
Yeah, but he's clearly not really that interested in her.
Exactly, so... But it's like, this was a thing that was going to be a part of his life regardless, but then he meets Liza, and then all bets are off. But that's the plot, and we pretty much just went over the entire cast, the most notable cast, just then. I like that. That was very freewheeling of us. But yes, that's Arthur, and of course, I mentioned earlier that there's a remake happening. It just came out last week, starring Russell Brand as Arthur, and let's see here.
Looks terrible, by the way.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I haven't seen any of the previews. I'm going solely on the poster, and the poster makes it look terrible, because Russell Brand looks vaguely creepy, and Jennifer Garner looks like sex bomb. And then we've got Helen Mirren, who looks to be the one great casting choice here, even though it's sort of been like the trend of the last year to cast Helen Mirren in iconic male roles.
It's true. Very true.
Because like she was in The Tempest last year as Prospera.
Not Prospero.
Even though in the play it's a man. And now she's going to play the John Gielgud role in the remake.
Hobson, yes.
And I think she could do a great job because she's so dry and British.
Oh, certainly.
So
the only like person in the not to talk about the remakes cast because I haven't seen it yet. So what can I say? The only person in the remakes cast that I'm like, I feel like they've overcast, if you will, is for the part of Bitterman. They've cast the great Luis Guzman as Bitterman, and Bitterman, while he's a delightful character in this movie in the original, he doesn't need a brash, loud comedian to play him.
Well, they hired a brash, loud comedian to play Arthur, although I guess that's kind of appropriate.
Russell Brand, if anything, is our generation's Dudley Moore. I would stand by that statement.
Okay.
I remember when Russell Brand first kind of came onto the scene with Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and of course with his stand-up, in America, as it were, I remember looking at him and thinking, there's your new Dudley Moore. I mean, matter of fact, in my head, my immediate thought was, I bet there's a remake of Arthur on the way.
And there was.
And maybe a couple months later, it was in the trades, it was going to happen. So I was very happy because I'm a big Russell Brand fan, so I'm excited to see this remake. I will have seen it a week before this airs, but you won't hear my reaction yet. But one thing I do want to talk about before we get into this movie particularly, I do want to talk about the remake just a little bit. I want to have a discussion because you're having seen this movie for the first time tonight. Is that correct?
Correct.
I've seen this a number of times. One of my favorites. I've been thinking a lot about how the comparison of cast.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get your take just based on kind of face value on the cast here. How do you feel about Russell Brand as Arthur? Just as an idea.
I can get behind that. I guess.
Okay.
I mean, he seems a bit more brash than Arthur, like Dudley Moore.
Okay.
Because he's Russell Brand.
Right.
I think that just because this movie is coming out in 2011, their instinct is going to be tone down the alcoholism.
Which, that does appear to be where they're going with this.
And then to compensate, ramp up everything else to stupid levels.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually the thing I put a Facebook status about this a couple weeks ago, where I was like, I have one concern about the Arthur remake, and it's the fact that they're definitely focusing more on the fact that he's like a man-child
right.
than they are the fact that he's
and
a trickster.
Isn't he going to be in the remake of whatever it's called, Drop Dead Fred?
I think that's been canceled,
oh,
thankfully.
Really? But I mean, isn't that about a man-child, basically?
No, that's about a creepy Australian imaginary friend.
Well, I knew it was imaginary friend, yeah. But because he was an imaginary friend, isn't that basically the same kind of role? Like,
Drop Dead Fred is almost Beetlejuice compared to Arthur.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Like it's more of a surreal movie. Arthur is is pretty much on the reel. But if you will, if I may, it's on the reel.
I mean, it's less about the cast, really, except, again, Luis Guzman, because...
He's the one person that I'm like, I like Luis Guzman, but I'm just like, I don't know if we need to make Bitterman that, like, important a character.
And it's sort of weird seeing Helen Mirren in the John Gielgud role.
But, I mean, honestly, who else would you pick?
Yeah, that's true.
It's absolutely true.
I mean, there's no other, you know, authoritative British actor slash actress right now that you could really cast in that
true.
Role.
It's
true. It's mainly just the fact that they're remaking it at all in 2011.
30th anniversary?
Yeah, but you're taking 2011 sensibilities to the project. And
it's true.
I'm a little worried about that.
But continue to talk about the remake cast, doing a comparative study, if you will. I do like Greta Gerwig. I like her in general. I think she's adorable.
I don't know who she is.
She very famously was in that film, Hannah Takes the Stairs. It was an independent film that did quite well. She was in Greenberg recently, you know?
I have not seen any of the movies she was in, which would explain why I haven't seen her.
Well, she's
although she's in House of the Devil, which I have been curious about for quite some time. But that's neither here nor there, really.
I just saw her when she was on Jimmy Fallon to promote No Strings Attached, and I was just like, oh, I adore you. So I was totally on board. It's hard to cast a role originated by Liza, you know. But I can get behind that. The other thing I'm kind of on the fence about, and not entirely because I adore her, is Jennifer Garner in the Jill Eikenberry part. Especially
right.
Considering
I was actually just about to say. However, wouldn't anybody go for Jennifer Garner? Anyone?
That's what I'm saying. Like
because.
I mean,
like, you made the comment to me in the car the other day about Jennifer Garner being actually a really great comedic actress.
She's fantastic.
And no one gives her the chops for it? Well, she's gorgeous, she's funny, and she... So that's basically all Arthur would ever need, really.
Exactly.
Why would he need Greta Gerwig as awesome as she may be?
The way they portray Jennifer Garner in the trailers for the remake is... They've taken Susan Johnson, and they have made her... I mean, it's still basically the same character. She's just a bit more sexually voracious. That's basically the big change.
Ooh, that's a real bad thing. Because Arthur doesn't have any
drive. You're not the first person to make that joke. You're not the first. And I mean, it's a valid point. Like, what? I mean, it's Jennifer Garner. I mean, I understand, you know, you love who you love. That's the whole point of this original film here. But, I mean, because Jill Eikenberry was a beautiful woman, but you know, it's still just an interesting thing, and that's basically all you need. And of course, Nick Nolte taking the part of Susan Johnson's father in the remake.
Perfect casting. Perfect.
Because Burt Johnson is a nutbag, so I'm absolutely on board with that one. But let's talk about the original.
Yes.
How did you enjoyed it?
I did. I actually loved it.
Wonderful.
I didn't love it for the first, like, 10 minutes. Like, it took me a while to get into it. But once I got into it...
As you described it, the first 10 minutes is kind of like the long opening to, like, an old sitcom.
Yeah. Like, it felt sitcom-y. Especially that cheesy Burt Bacharach song.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a sitcom song, doesn't it? Like, they play a shortened version over, like...
It feels
the Mary
a little bit
Tyler
like an
Moore
opening
show.
Scene
yeah.
from Taxi. It really does.
Yeah. I'm like, really? This is so, like, 80s sitcom. But then once they got into it... And Arthur won me over, because I really didn't care for him for the first, like, 15 or 20 minutes.
Well, because he was just a drunken stereotype telling Dudley Moore jokes.
Right. So, but once they got past all that stuff, I really enjoyed it. I didn't really buy the John Gielgud character either at the beginning.
Right.
Because it felt like no human being is that cold and detached and just stands around waiting to make hurtful quips.
Well, he was kind of shoehorned into that. I mean, in the early 80s, or even in the 80s in general... The British were always portrayed as that really stodgy, cold, heartless bastard kind of type of people.
Right.
Like, it's just a product of the times.
Yeah, I mean, but again, he grew to be, like, my favorite character in the movie enough time had passed. And there's a lot of really great, unexpectedly emotional stuff between him and Dudley Moore, which I really liked. I always like it when a comedy isn't afraid to go near the adult stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this movie never goes, like... That's the beauty part of, like, comedies in the 80s, or the early 80s, or just, I don't know, just really good comedies, if you will, is just that they never go too far in direction, one of the other things that does concern me about the remake is it's a Russell Brand picture, so it's probably going to be a bit more slapsticky, probably going to be a bit more, just not this, you know? I've been excited about the Arthur remake for a long time, so
I know you're a big fan of Russell Brand.
I am very much. So I'm looking forward to it, but I'm just like, and I'm not going to go in there expecting a shot for shot remake. This isn't Gus Van Sant's Psycho or anything. This is, you know, this is Arthur. I've never seen the remake of Alfie, nor have I seen the original, so I can't say anything about that. But it is interesting, those two pictures. They're like the two quintessential British Playboy in New York movies. You got your Michael Caine, your Jude Law, you got your Dudley Moore and Russell Brand. But yeah, I'm really glad you enjoyed this movie.
I was aware of it for a long, long time. Like, I was aware that it was a really respected comedy, but I knew very little about it. I just knew that John Gielgud was, like, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that when he came on screen, like, oh, like, this vague, like, memory sort of awoke in the back of my brain, like, you should pay attention to John Gielgud, because this is important.
I'm especially startled that you liked the movie, though, because you were in your traditional Melton mode during most of the movie with your...
Well, it was fun to be snarky.
Yeah.
But, like, it was the sort of movie that you could be snarky about it and yet still like it.
Right.
Like, because half of my jokes were just, like, making up more silly drunken stuff for him to say.
That's true.
And just, like, saying, oh, wouldn't it be great if, like, he reached behind this random object and pulled a drink out from behind it.
You were quite, like, taken with, I mean, I was too, who wouldn't be, the scene where he gets out of his car, goes into a house, comes back out, and there's a glass of scotch waiting on the car for him.
Right, and like, that scene in the church, wouldn't it be great if he like reached into the pew where this old woman was sitting and just pulled a glass of scotch out from it? Or like, he stumbles up to the front of the church and the priest just opens his robe and hands him a glass of scotch from within the robe. So, like, none of that was really, like, really being mean to the movie. It was
No. You were having a good time. I know that.
I was just having a good time at the movies. Indeed. That's all that was. Yeah.
So let's keep talking about this movie.
Okay.
Let's see. How do you feel about Dudley Moore?
Delightful.
Right on.
It took me a while to get used to his donkey laughter.
It's the classic Dudley Moore laugh.
That was obnoxious, but they sort of toned that down again after like the first 20 minutes. Like, once you'd seen him really drunk and braying, they didn't really feel the need to show you that much anymore.
It's just a progression of him becoming less and less of a drunk.
Right. I mean, like, him, it just sort of became more about his charming drunken quips, like about the moose. All of that stuff about the moose is awesome. You know, I was on board with Dudley Moore on this.
Right on.
I could see why people thought he was really charming, because he was really likable, even when he was swashed.
And he was quite famous in Britain. I mean, he was a big deal in Britain. He had been in a comedy team with Peter Cook for many, many years, and he was very famous for that, and made his way into America. I can't remember if this was his first American film. It may have been 10 with Bo Derek. You could look at the end of that if you feel the need. You don't have to, but it's... But the point is, this is definitely his signature role. Because whenever someone thinks of Dudley Moore, they always think of him drunkenly saying ridiculous things.
Right.
In this, like, Arthur voice. Like Ralph Garman. We keep talking about Ralph Garman, who some people might know. He's a very famous voice man, and he does a podcast with Kevin Smith called Hollywood Babylon. One of his impressions is Dudley Moore, and it's just Arthur. It's just Arthur. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Whatever he wants to say, it's drunken, and it always ends with that... Like, it always ends with that, you know?
It was a really creepy laugh.
Yeah.
I would like to inform the listeners that Dudley Moore's actual laugh in this movie is not that creepy.
Well, you are taking a stand.
Well, I loved yours. I took delight in yours because it sounded like an old, like, evil crone witch who turned into a man.
Crone witch?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like
all of that sounds terrible.
Yes,
you should know that I loved it.
Okay, awesome.
I'm just saying that that's not how it sounds in the film.
So how about Liza?
You know, I've always kind of been on the fence about her. In general.
You're not the stereotype gay where you're just like, Liza!
Liza, yeah. She's creepy. She's a little bit creepy. No matter what it is she's in, I mean, they really make her creepy in Arrested Development.
Obviously.
But that's on purpose. Like, here, this is in the heyday of Liza. Like, the only thing that I actively love Liza in is Cabaret.
Right.
And everything else, apart from that, I don't dislike her or anything. I've just, never really cared that much.
She looks a bit odd.
She does. And frankly, I brought up the point early in the movie. This woman, Jill Eikenberry, she loves Arthur. She's beautiful. She has money. she appreciates him, even though he's a drunken loser. And she's the perfect woman, basically. It's like, how can Russell Brand go with Greta Gerwig over Jennifer Garner?
That one's a bit harder. I mean, yeah.
I mean, Jill Eikenberry's not, like, the fun, spunky Liza in this movie, but, you know, it's hard to see why Arthur should say no to her.
Right.
When she's such a good match for him, basically.
I think it's more of a moral, almost a moralistic tale about the fact that, you know, he's been rich for... There's even a whole line about it toward the end of the movie. Spoiler alert, he does end up with Liza. There's that whole line at the end...
The movie's been out for 30 years.
It's true. But there's that line at the end about, you know, how he's been rich his entire life and always been unhappy, and she's been poor her entire life and been mostly happy. He wants to know what that's like.
Right.
You know, like, even though...
That leads me to something else about that.
The
about
ending?
This movie. No, the marketing campaign.
Oh.
I wasn't alive in 1981.
Okay.
But I've been sort of perusing the internet, looking at...
I've been,
like,
watching it, yes.
All the taglines for this movie, all the posters for this movie, all the plot descriptions of this movie. They talk about, Arthur's just a happy, fun drunk who's happy and drunk all the time. And, like, the posters, don't you wish you were Arthur? The most fun money can buy. Oh, he has the time of his life. And, like, he's actually miserable the whole movie.
Yeah, he is.
What a weird, what a misleading marketing campaign. I mean, I suppose they don't want movie theater, they don't want to put on a poster. Come see a movie about a miserable guy.
Yeah.
It's a comedy. but, you know, not honest of the marketing people.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. So what else should we talk about the original Arthur?
John Gielgud?
Let's do talk about John Gielgud.
John Gielgud is, like, the highlight of this movie.
He has so many great fucking lines.
Well, that's because all of his lines are, like, one-liners.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, like, he doesn't... I found myself thinking during the movie about, like, what was this guy's life like? Does Hobson have a life apart from taking care of Arthur all the time? Like, was he ever married? Did he ever... Like, what led him to be Arthur's servant? Like...
And you know what was one of the greatest things about watching this movie tonight?
What?
That it immediately followed us watching Archer.
Mm.
So the entire time watching Hobson, I kept thinking about...
Woodhouse.
Woodhouse, yeah, and I just, like...
I thought about that, too. Yeah. Yeah, I won't lie. Woodhouse isn't as clever.
No, he's not.
It's John Gielgud.
Exactly. So. I just love there's a movie out there where John Gielgud sarcastically asks Dudley Moore if he wants him to wash his dick.
Yeah.
Like, that's perfect. Or telling Paul Gleason to go screw himself. Like, that's amazing. You know, like, that's fantastic.
Drinkies.
Drinkies indeed. And there's a lot of drinking in this picture.
Oh, God, so much.
There's so much. Like, you really did get a hankering for liquor when we were watching this movie.
Well, he's so happy.
About halfway through
scotch.
There, you were like, you know, I really wish we'd bought some liquor. Like,
I would have, if I'd known what he was drinking in this movie, we would have bought scotch.
Oh, yeah.
We always talk about down scotch. It the way that he can. Because scotch just isn't a chugging drink, but...
I'm pretty sure Dudley Moore actually had a pretty big drinking reputation as well, just does it on his own merits.
I'm gonna actually look that up, I couldn't help but think when I heard that they cast Russell Brand. Of course they cast Russell Brand. He's also an alcoholic, or whatever his...
I mean, he's completely sober now, but, like, it's...
Like, if they'd done that with Dudley Moore, too, I've gotta wonder if that was, like, an unintentional thing.
No, I'm sure it was intentional. I mean, like I said, I mean, Russell Brand is the modern-day Dudley Moore for many reasons, more than just one. Like, he's very funny, he's very beloved in Britain, he's coming to America and making a big splash in various films, and he has a reputation to enjoy beverages, you know? Although the thing is, like I said, I do wonder, because this movie has made the drunken Dudley Moore such a legend, such a lasting image, that you have to wonder if, I mean, you've been doing some reading just then.
Yeah, I can't find anything about
a battle with alcoholism.
About
a
battle with
like
alcoholism
that.
Or whatever, but whatever. Well, he was known as a ladies' man.
Of course.
And one of his nicknames was the Sex Thimble.
The Sex Thimble.
I guess because he's so short.
He was a tiny man. Versus Russell Brand, who is...
Like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, and very tall, very, very gangly, you know?
Yeah, that's another thing about the 2011 film. The poster is creepy.
A little bit.
It's very creepy, because, like...
He's got a big face going.
Because he's sitting in a chair. He's, like, he's crammed his frame into this chair. And his mouth, he's smiling, but it's, like, this very wide smile with tons of teeth that makes him look almost like a demented chimpanzee. like he might eat you. Like, stay away from Arthur, you know, because he might eat you.
Yep.
Boom.
But some ladies like that.
Right. Tony Robbins hungry.
Oh, man. So what else to talk about this movie? Well, there's, of course, the music.
By Burt Bacharach.
Burt Bacharach, ladies and gentlemen.
It's so Burt Bacharach-y.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about the opening song?
I do, because I love that song.
Arthur's theme, or The Best That You Can Do.
By Christopher Cross.
It sounds like a woman. I thought it was Carly Simon singing it both times.
Really?
Yeah. Just like in a really low register of her voice.
You know, I can kind of see that.
I couldn't. It didn't sound like a man to me, but that's
it's just Christopher mine. Cross, the master of yacht rock.
Well, this song won an Oscar, too.
For Best Original Song that year, yes, indeed.
It was written in collaboration between Burt Bacharach, Christopher Cross, and frequent writing partner Carol Bayer Sager.
Do you know that person?
Yeah. She wrote a lot of lyrics for Burt Bacharach songs.
Ah, all right. So, like, what do you do when you fall in love, you know?
Yeah.
You were like, yep, Jeff, moving on.
No, I mean, I know about her because in that Monty Python...
Fall in love.
Way to acknowledge her lyrics, Jeff.
I'm a terrible person. Go on.
I know about her because there's a Monty Python movie called The Meaning of Life.
Yes, indeed.
And there's a restaurant where you go to, but they don't serve food. They serve conversations.
I've seen it. I know.
And they serve, like, philosophy. And they're like, oh, do all great philosophers have an S in their name? And they're like, well, you know, who doesn't have an S in their name is Burt Bacharach. And they're like, that hasn't got an S in it. Or Hal David. Who's Hal David? He writes the lyrics. Burt just writes the tunes. Only now, he's married to Carol Bayer Sager. And everyone else in the audience is like, there's an S in there! But the guy on the screen's like, what? So yeah.
I haven't seen the meaning of
that's how
so
I knew
long.
That she existed. I'm not really familiar with, like, anything about her beyond that and her connection to Burt Bacharach. But she is an American lyricist, songwriter, singer, and painter.
Painter?
Yeah. Her husband, Robert A. Daly, former chairman CEO of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Wow.
Yeah.
These are some busy people.
They are. She has only 3 albums to her name, so good for you, Carol Bayer Sager. Well, and she doesn't even have a picture on Wikipedia, so... Hmm.
Well, you know, Dudley Moore was a multi-talented fella.
He was. I was looking at him online, and I saw that he wrote the music for Bedazzled.
The original
Bedazzled, which I have not seen, and I saw the remake with Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley.
Yes.
What happened to Elizabeth Hurley?
She disappeared. She just flat out fucking disappeared.
Like, remember when she was everywhere in, like, the 90s? Because she was, like, the super hot model who was in Austin Powers.
Yeah. But she was also, she's also very talented and a very funny lady.
I don't know where she went.
I know where she went.
Where'd she go?
She disappeared for a while. She was on this, there's this great, BBC documentary called The Human Face. It's hosted by, John Cleese. I watched it with a former acquaintance of ours, and she was one delightful in it. She kind of helped narrate it and what have you. But right now, the one thing I can tell you she's doing is that she's been cast as the big bad in the first season of NBC's looking to be horrible Wonder Woman, series coming up this fall. So, that's a thing.
She hasn't done that much. Yeah, she's going to be in The Wonder Woman. She's going to be in the 2010 Wild Bunch, which
what?
I guess is an animated film, being the first feature-length CGI animated film produced in Israel, so that's interesting.
That is interesting.
But since Austin Powers, she's only done, like, one movie every 2 or 3 years. The biggest leap is between 2006 to 2010.
Wow.
So she totally hasn't been doing much acting, whereas if you look at her filmography in the 90s, it's like...
She was everywhere.
2 or 3 films every year.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidently, right now, she's running a beachwear line, too, like fashion.
Oh, that's right. She does do fashion. That's right. That's how she's kept busy.
Yeah.
And of course, she was once married to Hugh Grant, you know.
In the 90s.
In the 90s. Elizabeth Hurley, who was not in any version of Arthur.
No.
We should talk about Arthur. You want to talk about the sequel to Arthur?
Oh, God, Arthur 2.
Arthur 2 on the Rocks. Which
released in 1988, a full 7 years later.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've been told not to see it, and I probably won't see it.
It's bad. So bad that Dudley Moore disowned it.
Indeed. There are a couple things about the movie that have enticed me, but I still won't. It's that I believe it may be either the first or one of the most prominent early roles for Kathy Bates. She has a big part in that movie. Same goes for Kevin Spacey, two of my favorite actors, you know. But I won't touch on The Rocks. I'll tell you, it's an interesting thing. I actually knew Arthur 2 on The Rocks existed before Arthur existed. I saw it, oddly enough, on a VHS rack at a Toys R Us when I was like 6 years
That's
old.
That's odd.
They sell
Why do you remember that?
I just do. Because I was like, what is this? Although I'll tell you why I remember Liza. This is a movie that we're going to cover probably sometime in the future. A film called, by the name of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. I'm sure you've heard of it. There's a scene where they get their car... I think they get the car stolen by like a group of drag queens. And one of them is dressed like Liza, but just looks hideous. And so that's why whenever I thought of Liza as a kid, whenever someone would talk about Liza, I would be like, oh, that hideous woman? Like, it was... I was very convinced that she was a drag queen.
Well, she certainly looks like one. Boom!
Oh, Liza.
Yeah, she's 65 right
65.
Now.
Is that a recent picture?
At 2008.
Oh, wow.
So not terribly long ago.
She actually looks better there than she did in Arrested Development.
Yeah, well, I think they kind of tried to make her look awful on that show.
She looked very schlubby, and she was she had the vertigo, you know, getting into all kinds of comical situations,
yep.
Arguments with Jessica Walter and affairs with Tony Hale. Magic,
indeed.
Arrested Development was just a wonderful show.
It was.
But you know what else was wonderful?
Arthur.
Damn right.
Boom. I know where your mind works.
Good. Very good.
I know how it works also.
All right, so have we covered all the major topics about this movie?
I think so.
Do you want to talk about favorite moments?
Sure.
What do you got for me, Mr. Melton?
Anything with John Gielgud.
He really
moments
does.
Moments that I made up where he pulls out a drink out of nowhere.
This is one of those, like, there are times where I would love to live in the universe that your crazy humor inhabits. Because you have this idea for movies that don't exist, but they would be such strange movies where people are like pulling scotch out of jackets. Like, it's I want to see
strange
these movies.
Sense of humor, I admit it.
You do. Your
if
flights.
If I were to remake these movies, that's the sort of thing that would happen.
Your flights of fancy are always a delight. You know, I should have mentioned this in our conversational 2 weeks ago, but Nick has been. We are recording this once again in my hometown. Nick has come to visit. I'm very excited about that. But we've been, in the mornings, I've been treating you to Taste of the 90s with the name of Boy Meets World.
Oh, God.
A show that I love and grew up with. And Mr. Melton, your reactions and your comments, just watching anything with Melton is a treat. you learn and see so many different perspectives. But to be serious for a moment, John Gielgud, though, to awkwardly shift back to that. So, talking about John Gielgud, though, I do love... I want to go ahead and talk about this since you mentioned it. I do love very much... There's a running idea in this movie that Arthur has never grown up, but... Austin,
and that's something that's... I'm actually... Now that you mention it, I'm kind of surprised that the movie doesn't do more with that.
Yeah.
Because they emphasize it a lot at the beginning. And then they kind of don't anymore.
Well, do you feel that it was a matter of the fact that in, like, 1981, do you feel that... his drunkenness would have indicated a lack of growing up? Do you feel like that was more of a product of the times? Because as you notice with the remake, you know, they're focusing much more on the not growing up, and there's actually been very little of the drinking in the advertisements. Although I've heard that there is drunkenness at some point in that movie. You can't have Arthur without some drunkenness, you know. But, like, you see in the trailer, like, there's a scene where he's going to bed and Hobson, like, you know, turns out the light in his bed, like, she told him to grow up, and he's like, he has some, like, long argument with her. She turns off a light in his bedroom, and there's, like, a glow-in-the-dark mobile of the planets above his bed. Like, it's...
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
It's really weird. But, like, I mean, I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm gonna absolutely give it a shot. I mean, that movie, it's Arthur. I mean, I don't see, like... How to explain it? I don't see how you could truly, completely fuck up Arthur. Like, I don't see... I feel like it's kind of... mistake-proof in a weird way. I feel like there are some things you could do that you'd be like, why'd you do that? But I don't think, like, I really don't... Although I'm also not the kind of person to, like, take remakes too seriously. You know that about me.
Right.
I'm not the kind of person that, like, if you remake a movie, I'm like, oh, you've committed a cardinal sin. Off with your head. I won't be that guy. If it disappoints me, it disappoints me, but it won't ruin the original for me, and I'll still be glad I saw it, you know? Like,
right.
But yeah, like, that the whole idea of the fact that Arthur can't grow up, but Hobson has been grown up forever, and that there's that scene where Dudley Moore brings him just a series of, like, child gifts to make him feel young. I've never really... It's weird. I've known this movie and seen this movie countless times since about 2004, but tonight was the first time that a lot of the more emotionally resonant scenes really stuck with me. And that was one of them. Very beautiful scene. It's a different movie. I also found myself laughing a lot. I'm stepping all over your favorite moments.
Oh, it's totally cool. Keep going.
But I found myself laughing a lot more. I mean, I laugh anyway at things like, you know, offer to take my coat. You know, wearing one, sir. All right. Offer to take my tie. Like, I love that. That's my favorite line from this movie, bar none. Like, that's my favorite line. Even beyond that, I found myself laughing at a lot more things. Like, this is a movie that is going to age very well on a personal level. And it has aged well just
in general.
Yeah, because, I mean, this movie, there are certain facets of it that are so clearly 1981. Liza's wardrobe, most especially, but, like...
Can't you just chalk that up, though, to it being Liza?
Nah. maybe. But the point is, like, this movie, it's timeless. The only thing that might not hold up and might actually make the remake kind of hard to swallow for some people is the fact that it's about rich people, you know. Like, and this is at a very hard economic time. You know, it's kind of hard to sympathize with the rich people and be like, oh, I'm so glad they got their money. You know, like, it's,
well, that's why I think the tagline for the new picture is "Meet the world's only lovable billionaire."
That is some smart marketing right there. See, there you go. The marketing for the new one. It's a little better for you, you know what I'm saying? Like, because you didn't like that, you know... What was the one for the original that you didn't care for? What was it again?
It was Don't You Wish You Were Arthur.
Exactly, yeah.
And no, I don't wish I were Arthur until the end when he gets it together.
But you're more on board for this new tagline.
Like, yeah.
It works. But I did step out of all of your favorite moments. Keep going. You got your John Gielgud. What else you got for me, sir?
There were several of Dudley Moore's moments. The interchange about the moose was awesome.
Fantastic.
I liked the interchanges when John Gielgud was sick and Dudley Moore was sort of taking care of him. Because it's such a pivotal scene for the character. Like, Hobson has to die. Like,
yeah.
You don't want him to, but it's what, you know, nudges him into behaving like an adult.
Right.
You know. Again, I liked the moments I made up.
me too.
I don't know. It's hard for me to. It's hard to talk about a comedy because all you really want to do is just quote your favorite lines.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Like, we're often very wary of covering comedies on either of our shows.
Yeah,
because you do often fall into that rut of just quoting stuff. But I just feel like, especially in the case of a movie like Arthur, like I said, it's such a pivotal film. Such an inspiring film. That's not the right word. You're not helping me with the word I'm looking for, Nick. What kind of film is it?
A comedy?
No. Like, what is it done to influential? That was I can't speak English. It's such
right.
an influential film, and that took way too long. But it's such an influential film, as you say, and I've completely forgotten where I was going with that. So let's just stop and keep going.
Excellent.
But yes. Any further?
Not really.
And I remember what my point was just now. The point is, we don't cover comedies, but this is such an influential comedy.
Right.
And it balances comedy and the seriousness so well.
Right. I mean, it's not a laugh-a-minute sort of
no,
movie.
No, no, no.
I mean, you do laugh a lot at the little quips, but I didn't belly laugh that often. I wasn't like, ha 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 ha, the entire movie.
Right.
It was just sort of like, I don't know, I think that's sort of interesting. That this is one of those comedies that doesn't want to try and make you laugh all the time.
Which is another reason to be worried about the Russell Brand remake.
Yeah.
I mean, I love him, and I'm very, like I said, I'm very optimistic about this movie, but I'm just like, you know, the original is a product of a time where you could make a comedy that dipped into the serious the ways in which this movie does and how often this movie does. You know, you can't get that very often in a modern film.
Yeah.
You know, because the modern films... I mean, they always say it, but it's so true. The short attention spans of modern audiences really wouldn't lend to a movie like this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's sad but true. So, like I said, I just... Part of the reason why I wanted to cover this is because the remake is coming out, or will have come out a week before this airs. Part of me wants to even add, like, a bonus addendum after I see it at the end of this episode. I don't know if I will. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But the point is, like, it's just that, like, this is a movie I hold very dear. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not the guy who gets very angry about a bad remake. But I really do want to see the new one do something special.
Right.
You know, I really do. And I love the cast of both of these films. I love the casts. So that's that. So that's it for your favorite moments?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. My favorite moments, I love Dudley Moore. I really do. I don't know nearly enough about him and know enough of his work to... Then I should. I should really get to know him more. I would love to see some of his old bits with Peter Cook. I would love to get into that. I quite enjoy John Gielgud as well, and I do enjoy Liza. I really do. I mean, she's a little nutty in this movie, and her wardrobe is somewhat atrocious. I feel like I'm losing you, Melton.
I'm listening.
All right, you're off to the side over here reading about Cabaret.
I got sidetracked with Liza Minnelli.
Well, you're the co-host of a show. Pay some damn attention, Melton.
I'm paying attention.
As I pound my fist.
Into the bed.
Indeed, but seriously, Liza. I mean, she's likable in this picture.
Yeah, but she's Liza.
Do you find Liza off-putting, kind of just in her natural state?
A little bit.
I can kind of get behind that, but I mean, even if it weren't Liza, I like this character. I like a smart-ass
she's
girl.
She's like the Cher in Moonstruck character.
But then, see, I find Cher off-putting, so what do we do with this?
I've actually never seen Moonstruck. It just strikes me as the same kind of character, the woman who kind of beats this guy out of the status quo.
I love you! Snap out of it! Yeah, I know, like, it's...
Couldn't you see Liza doing that in this movie?
I could, actually.
Liza, so she wouldn't do it quite the harshness that Cher would.
The only Cher movie I've ever seen is Mermaids. Have you ever seen Mermaids?
I've seen parts of it. The only part of Mermaids I really love and remember is the bit where Christina Ricci gets the pumpkin on her head and is stumbling around through the kitchen. That's what I love.
I love anything with Bob Hoskins.
He looks really creepy on the cover of Mermaids.
He does.
Have you ever seen it? I'm sure you have.
What, the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. It's one of my sister's favorites.
No, I don't mean the movie. I mean the cover of the movie.
Oh, if it's the one I've seen, then perhaps, yes.
He's got, like, his eyes are just a little bit too wide and... Oh, yeah, here it is.
Oh, the original poster, you mean?
Yeah. Look at his eyes.
Ah!
I know, right?
That's not Mario.
Yeah.
Bob Hoskins, who's not in Arthur, but he's still wonderful.
He should have been in Arthur.
But yes, Liza, I mean, I'm right there with you. I'm often on the fence about Liza. I could never dislike Liza. There's just something about her that I'll always like. Oh, is that that Little Mermaid picture with
Julianne
Moore? we're all over the place. But seriously, Liza, I like the character. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see so many great actresses in that role. Even today, I could see somebody... Like, it's about the role. It's not about the actress in that situation. I mean, Liza's great, but it's about the role. What else? I do love the music. There's this sick part of me... Not even a sick part of me. It's just a part of me there's a part of me that's a lot older than I am. So I love Yacht Rock. I love Christopher Cross and you know, and Michael McDonald. You know, like, I love that kind of stuff. And I love this... And I like Burt Bacharach quite a bit. Like, I have never heard anything that didn't just, like, soothe me. I mean, sometimes he veers into, I should be at the dentist's office because... This is, but I love that. It's just, it's so smooth. And, you know, Mike Myers...
and Burt Bacharach.
Mike Myers has given me an appreciation for Burt Bacharach that I can never get away from. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Burt Bacharach. Like, And you remember, I almost expected that to happen. I've seen this movie countless times.
What the world needs now.
I was so waiting for that.
Love, sweet love.
Because we were talking about the wedding scene, how you kind of expected him to be the organist.
Yeah.
Like, he needed to show up at some point in this movie.
He could have been... Well, what he should have been was the pianist at the engagement party.
That's true. But then again, he would have kind of overshadowed the fact that Dudley Moore was such an accomplished pianist, which he was indeed. I actually have one of his albums.
Really?
I do.
Is it good?
I've never listened to it.
Well, good.
But I have it, because I was intrigued. But yeah, I do like the music. I love this movie. Boy, do I love this movie. I appreciate this movie because... It's from 1981, but it feels... But by the same token that it feels recent, it also feels older.
Right.
You can almost imagine this story being told in the 60s with like a Doris Day, Rock Hudson kind of situation. You know, you really kind of could. It has that... It is timeless. I guess that's the best way to... It is timeless, you know? And I... Not to, like, toot my own horn or get a little too personal, but I just appreciate that there's a movie like this that I can love.
Right.
Because I know I'm spastic and weird on this show, and people have seen me that I'm just a crazy bastard, but, you know, I appreciate having something low-key that I can love like this. And this is a great thing like that, you know. Yeah, that's about it for me. I just love this movie.
As you
should. Flat out love it, and I'm really looking forward to the remake. Who's to say that... Like I said, this is airing the week after it comes out. Who's to say that I won't be disappointed by it? But I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope it's a fitting 2011 version of this classic picture.
Boom.
With a really likable cast.
I agree.
I love Jennifer Garner, but I can go on for hours about that. But there it is from 1981. Arthur, the best movie of all time.
Shaboom.
Shaboom. I'm going to Shabooms.
Love it. I love it.
Oh, you do. But that's that. And I guess that's it. That's the OUP for this week. Nick, I've been very happy to have you in my home.
Yes, it was fun.
And I hope to have you back sometime.
I enjoy your home.
Yes,
you have a really cozy room here.
I'm glad someone has drawn my attention to that, because I'm always kind of concerned about it. But you know me, I'm always, you know, uneased about things, because I'm Jeff. But you know what I'm not uneased about?
What?
This movie.
Boom.
We're going to repeat it again. Arthur, the best movie of all time. Seriously, that's been the OUP for this week. Let's say that better than that. That's been the OUP for this week. I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Go experience 7 days. Sam Fear, ladies and gentlemen.